Hey, it's Francis. This week, we've got a good one. One of my favorite episodes to make ever, where we got to visit this amazing Uzbek couple and got a lesson on dumpling making and being in love for half a century. That and lots of other stories about food and love. Good vibes, you know? Have a listen.
I'm Francis Lam, and you're listening to The Splendid Table from APM, the show for curious cooks and eaters. A few years ago, it occurred to me that I have not been to a wedding in a long time. And then I realized it was because I am well past the age where I have friends getting married. I mean, if anything, I'm frankly closer to their second marriages than their first. And almost everyone I know at this point, if they're with someone long term, is way out of the honeymoon phase and just living the normal daily life of being with someone. Which is great, but that's not to say there isn't something new you can learn every day about the person you're with or about their food. This week, it's food and marriage. We make dumplings with an Uzbek couple who may well have been married as long as I've been alive. We hear about what bread told one woman about her husband, and we learn about what it's like, for real, to be married to a cookbook author. But first, love and chivapi. Last year, I got to spend a couple days in St. Louis, and the person who checked me in at the hotel told me that I had to go to this little Bosnian restaurant called Balkan Treat Box. She was Bosnian, she said, and she said, you know, I like their food better than my own mother's. So I walk in, and the first thing I see is a roaring fire inside a shiny gold oven. A woman was standing in front of it, working these little pillows of dough with her hands and baking these fantastic-looking, chewy breads. She stuffed one of them with onions and kaimak, which is this thick cream spread, and a few perfectly grilled chivapi, juicy, bouncy beef sausages. And it was awesome. It was so good. That woman is Lauren Nalich. She runs the place with her husband, Ado. And truthfully, I wish I could be there right now eating that sandwich again. But what I loved even more than the food was getting to talk to this couple and finding out how they came to have this place. It really does seem like your business, your home, your family is really about the relationship between the two of you. I know you came to the United States, came to St. Louis as a refugee from Bosnia in the 90s.
2004. I came after the big influx of refugees.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And how did you two meet?
I was working at a Bosnian restaurant down in what was called Little Bosnia, and Lauren was a sales rep for Sysco, a big food company.
Yeah.
So she would come in and sell to a restaurant. That's how we met.
You should all, if you don't see the way he just looked at her when he said that. Sweet.
Yeah, it was funny. When we met, and then we talked about how the first time we met years later, it was ended up being the exact same story, which is that like there was like some sort of electric spark that happened. Like as soon as we laid eyes on each other, it was just really. And I thought it was just me, you know, being like he's so handsome, like in my head, and then. Turns out, like, we ended up talking about that day, and it was the same for him.
Oh, wow.
But you cannot give away.
Yeah, he doesn't give away too much. He had a pretty thick wall up for a while, so.
But it wasn't romantic at first.
No,
you guys
it was
struck
not.
Up a friendship.
Yeah. Yeah, we became friends. And I was calling on the restaurant, the same day every week. And part of the job is to, you know, is relationship. So one of their workers at the time ended up going back home to Bosnia, and they needed help on Tuesday nights to cover the bar. Mm-hmm. And I had a lot of restaurant experience, so I helped them out on Tuesday nights. So that's, we ended up really getting to know each other then, because he would come up and hang with everybody there. That was kind of like the spot that they would get together at as
sure,
well.
Sure.
And then just ended up talking, hanging out. And then one day, like, he came in and we were only two at the bar. Everybody was outside. It was a beautiful night. And he just looked really troubled and he didn't want to talk about it. He just wouldn't let me see it. And then told me that he's probably going to be deported. And I had never encountered a situation like that before. It was heartbreaking and I didn't understand. And I was kind of a rebellious young lady. So jokingly, we joked around about, you know, how I could marry him and he could stay. And then we did just that. And so we got married because he needed a green card. And then very shortly after realized that we were best friends and actually fell in love. And we got married to the date a year later with my kids. He asked my kids permission if he could marry me. So it was, and that was, we just celebrated our 12-year anniversary. So,
oh man,
just wanted something. I did get had a, I did have a letter from the INS asking me to leave.
Yeah.
In 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So I was being deported. Yeah.
It wasn't an elaborate
it was line,
not, like the most elaborate pickup line of all time.
Right. But it was just so, like, his whole family, you know, he had been here. How long were you here at that point?
3 years.
3 years. And hadn't seen his mom and dad and his brother, who, I mean, I've never seen somebody feel so deeply about their family before. Mm-hmm. And to be so far apart and want to be together and try to figure out how to do that. And he was here to figure that out. His dad is a twin of his aunt that lives here.
Okay.
And they sent for him. He's the oldest son. And they got separated from Germany when the Bosnians had to leave Germany. And they were supposed to come to the United States as well. But they got separated. So his family had to go back to Bosnia. And his aunt and uncle and their kids came here.
Oh, wow.
So it's just really, like, heartbreaking.
Yeah. Ado, so, I mean, you missed your family, but as I understand it, obviously you also missed some of the food that you grew up with.
Oh, absolutely.
And that was part of the conversation between you two as friends and how, Lauren, you became interested in this food.
Yeah.
So you grew up in St. Louis. You were born and raised here.
Yes.
There's a huge Bosnian community here.
Right.
But you didn't know anything about this food until...
I had a little bit of knowledge. And then everything changed once I met his family. And then you eat the food in the home and it becomes a whole different experience.
Yeah. And how'd you learn to cook it?
From his family first. But then in 2013, when we decided that we were going to do this food truck, which we had before the restaurant, Edo said, if we're going to do this, and we're going to do this style of food, it's going to be really important that you go to the source to try it because it's different.
Mm.
And so I had never left the country before and hadn't really traveled too much, and definitely had not left my kids for any long periods of time. So
sure.
Edo actually stayed behind and took care of the kids. And I went to travel over the Balkan area to try to learn as much as I can, not just in, you know, sort of more commercial settings, but also in homes.
Mm.
To kind of absorb not just the food, but the culture as well. Learned a lot about hospitality there.
Yeah.
It was never, I mean, I don't think anyone said no to me when I said, can I come over and cook this food? Will you teach me this? I mean, it was all yes, 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 please. They were so excited.
Do you remember the first bite of something that blew you away?
Cevapi.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I'd had it, but it was a whole different experience there. And it took me a while to figure out why.
So just for listeners who don't know, cevapi are little, almost like kebabs, like ground meat kebabs, or you might call them little sausages, but they're not encased.
Right. There's no casing.
And they're typically made of beef.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, depending on the region, you have things that are like mixed in. I fell in love with the specific ones from Sarajevo, so they are of beef.
Mm,
okay. But they were, it was a magical experience.
Yeah.
And trying to figure out how to kind of deconstruct it to figure out why.
Yeah.
You're looking at it and you're like, but why is this so amazing? And you can't figure it out for the longest time. You have to eat it many times. And then
it wasn't just the romance of being there.
Like
there
no, because I had to take that out of everything.
Okay.
Which was hard because I was very smitten. I mean, I my whole life changed. It changed who I was. It taught me to slow down a little bit, look at things from a different perspective. That was probably the hardest thing for me to figure out.
Yeah.
And it was something that I really wanted to nail.
Yeah. And so you managed to get Lauren to fall in love with you. Great job. Good work. But how's it feel to you that, you know, she has totally changed not just her life and your life together, but like she's fallen in love not just with you, but the cuisine you grew up with?
It's made me very, very proud.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when it comes to food and cooking, Lauren was always very, very passionate and very respectful of the ingredients, of the experience, of everything. So I always knew, and I would always tell her, if there is going to be someone who's going to make it popular, it's you. Because of that passion, and because of she brings the American aspect into the game. Why are you laughing? You know I'm right. And
I know nothing.
I really did not have any doubt that she's going to excel at it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we have a wood burning oven on the truck, and we bake the bread every day on the truck.
Wow.
That's dedication and passion.
Yeah. So congratulations to you too. Thank you again for having us. It was really, really, really special to get to eat with you.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you for coming.
Lauren and Ado Nalich own Balkan Treat Box in St. Louis, Missouri. Coming up...
We try to keep every moment when we are together.
Yeah.
Even in kitchen. So I help her a lot. But when I cook, I don't like somebody in kitchen. I cook only myself.
We make dumplings with an Uzbek couple who've been making them together for decades. I'm Francis Lam, and this is The Splendid Table from APM. I'm Francis Lam, and this is the show for curious cooks and eaters. Demira Inatulaeva is a retired cardiologist, and her husband, Sahib Animov, was a professor of Central Asian history at the University of Samarkand. They came to the U.S. from Uzbekistan 6 years ago, and Demira teaches Uzbek cooking classes in her home now. She is the official cook in the house, but Sahib is her willing assistant, and one of the dishes that her students love to make is barak, a kind of dumpling that, if you just looked at it, you might mistake for a wonton or really more like a tortelloni. But that's less surprising when you remember that Uzbekistan is smack in the middle of the Silk Road. Barak happens to be a dish that the couple make together when you spend a morning with them in their home in Brooklyn. So Demira, Sahib, thank you so much for having us in your house.
Thank you so much for coming. Welcome to our home.
It's beautiful. I love seeing all the pottery from Uzbekistan. It's gorgeous patterns. Your Samarkandian silk paper. And you're going to make barak with us today, or at least you're going to show me how to fold barak. But before we start, can you tell us a little bit about barak? What are they?
Okay. Barak is Samarkandian dumplings. So barak is Uzbek dumplings, but in different places of Uzbekistan, the name of this dish is different. For example, in Tashkent, they say chuchvara, in Bukhara, they say tushbera, and in Samarkand, we say barak. Barak came from the word baraka, which means prosperity and wellness.
Really?
Yes, and happiness. And the feeling in barak, it can be very different. For example, filling can be with butternut squash and onion, kadu barak. If it is a filling with herbs, it will be alafi barak. If it is filling with meat mixed with mint, it will be pudana barak. And if it will be filling with eggs, it will be tuhum barak. Today we will make regular barak, simply meat and onion and salt, nothing more.
Okay.
This is a recipe of my mom.
Really?
And this barak, I think this is the best in the world.
Okay, so now you've made the filling already.
Yes.
The beef, salt and onions just mixed together.
Mm-hmm. And now I will roll out the dough and cut the dough for small squares. And we will put on every square a little bit meat and fold barak.
Great.
Okay?
Ready to go.
So for dough, we need egg, water, a little bit oil, and flour.
You have this nice dough already mixed. You pat it into a circle.
Yes, I will make big round and then we'll cut it to the small squares.
Okay. When you make barak like this, is this usually, do you make it by yourself or do you make this together?
Barak before, many years ago, it was not everyday dish.
Okay.
It was a holiday dish because we have big families in Uzbekistan. And usually with family live elder people like grandmothers, grandfathers, uncles and aunts, children. And all they are helping to make barak. And I want to say that in Uzbekistan, cooking, it is not simply cooking. It is the way of socializing, the way of sharing the knowledges. It is the way that brings families and friends more closer to each other.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. By the way, you see the smell of
the oil. Yeah.
It is also good. And we do it on holidays because we can't send to the heaven nothing, only
right
smell.
So you light to fry them so
you can
let the heavens know that
like
we're,
we also,
we've got them in mind.
Like we also thinking about the people who passed.
Mm-hmm.
So
earlier you had said in Uzbekistan a lot of families have pretty specific roles for the men and women. But that's not the way that you've done it in your family, and you've both shared in the cooking.
Yeah.
Why is that?
In our past life in Uzbekistan, we were very busy in our job.
Mm-hmm.
And only in the kitchen we can do something together, be closer to each other, and we try to keep every moment when we are together, even in kitchen. So I help her a lot. But when I cook, I don't like somebody in kitchen. I cook only myself. But Damira, she likes when I cook near her. And I can do nothing, but if I near her, she feels herself better.
Yeah. How long have you been married?
It was
35.
More than 35 years ago.
I love it when you've lost count. It's like, 35, 40, somewhere around there.
Yeah. Almost 40.
What's 5 years between friends?
Can you help me, please?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so we're about to start wrapping dumplings. You've rolled this beautiful dough out.
Yeah.
You folded it into these strips. You cut them into these beautiful squares.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's about a teaspoon of this filling in each square.
Yeah, this is a little bit maybe not easy for the first time, but nothing complicated. Fold one, fold two, the third finger in front, and...
They're so cute.
Yeah.
They're like little rainbow tortellinis.
I love when you put it in beautiful way, okay?
Oh, okay. So
here,
the way it works is there's a little dot of the filling in the center of the square. You fold the bottom of the square up, and then you fold the top of that square back down to create a double layer, and then you curl the whole thing around your little finger so it has a little belly button shape. Okay, so you've been married 35, maybe 40 years.
Yeah.
How did you meet?
This is a good question.
She likes to
almost
tell
on
the
every
story.
Class I have these questions. People curious about it. I was student of the medical school in Samarkand, and Sahib was a student of Samarkand State University. And one day there was a big party, and I were there with my friends, and Sahib came there with his friends. And you know how it's happening, music, dancing, and he invited me for dance.
Good move.
And we start to dance, and he looked at me like, it was, oh my God, I can't tell you. It was everything in this glance, everything, love, passion, tenderness, admiration. And I said to myself, oh, wow. So, and we danced, and I wanted this dance never stopped. But music finished, and I gave him my phone number, he gave me his phone number, and we start dating.
I want to say a little bit, a couple of words about a fate. So, I didn't want to go to this party.
Okay.
But one of my friends, he promised me that he brought some workbooks and some notebooks for the test. So I went there only for these stuffs. So when
you want the answer to the test?
Yes. I need to prepare for the test. I was very responsible with learning. So then when I got everything, I decided to left. The party was in the second floor of the club, and I went to the downstairs, went to the front door, and tried to open it, but it was locked. Then I said to myself, okay, maybe I need to be here. It is my destiny. So, And I sit in the corner, and notice a group of girls, and among them one girl, unlike anyone else. So he was beauty. But when started to talk, I realized that together with her beauty, she's very smart, has very sharp mind, and has deep knowledge of everything.
Yeah.
And it hit me like a thunderbolt. I say, it's unusual girl. So,
but I have to tell you, while you've been lost in this memory, Jameer has also gone and made all the rest of the dumplings. So she's very quick, too. She's quick in lots of ways.
Okay. He never told me this story. Oh. I love this story.
It's a good one.
She doesn't know many things.
So earlier you had said part of the reason why you two have always cooked together is because you just love having time for each other. Yeah. And when you're busy, being in the kitchen was a way you can do that. For me, I love my wife dearly. We don't cook together. We don't have like a good rapport in the kitchen. The communication isn't always the same, and sometimes it gets frustrating. We bump into each other, and so it's just easier for us if I'm doing the cooking, I'm just doing the cooking. Mm-hmm. If she wants to do something, she wants to do something. And we kind of, that's not a place where we can always connect. Mm-hmm. How did you two learn to connect together while cooking? Or how do you keep that communication going while you're cooking?
First day after our marriage, I never cooked.
Yeah, she taught you to cook.
Yeah, Damiro that time was not perfect cook too. And she tried to surprise me with her skills in kitchen. Yeah. And one day, I think it's good if you tell this story.
I will tell this story. Okay.
Because
you don't want to say the wrong thing.
Yeah.
At that period, it was not popular to eat outside. The food outside was not good, and mostly
the story about we cooked, the shirchoy.
We cooked in the kitchen, and one day I wanted to surprise my husband. He loved to eat for breakfast. Traditional food that is milk with black tea, adding a little bit
butter
and heavy cream and walnuts and bread. And I prepared this food for him and was very proud about this.
You can
don't
touch the dough.
At that time, My brother was also in our home. I served to them both, and my brother took the spoon and tried this food, and said to me, "Oh, you know, I'm late.
I gotta go."
And he went to the home. I said, "Okay," and then my husband, he tried it and looked at me very attentively. And I said, what? He said, nothing. And he ate everything to the end. And then he left. And next I thought to myself, and it was very, very salty. It was
horrible salty.
Unbelievable salty. But he ate everything to the end. Maybe he loved me then.
Oh, I don't know. I just motivated you to be perfect in your way of cooking.
So now that the barak are all made, you like to cook them two different ways,
yeah.
Right? You like to boil them and fry them.
Yes.
Which way should we do today?
First, we will fry it.
Okay.
And we will boil other part. This kind of barak, fried barak, usually on the table on wedding parties. Mm. And it was many years ago, and the same the modern days also. Because what is barak? Barak, it is the food or wishing prosperity to the young couple.
Mm. So if you fry it, it looks golden. Is there like a symbol of that? Is that like a symbolism?
No, we just try to fry it very good.
So the fried barak you would serve on the table as an appetizer, and boiled barak you serve as a main dish.
Right.
Yeah. So when barak will float, mm-hmm. I will add water into the pot, and it float again. And I will put water. And when it float the third time, I will take it to the plate and serve it with butter and sour cream.
Sounds good. So, Nira, you said cooking is your passion, and mm-hmm. you love to be in the kitchen, mm-hmm. and you love Sahib to be here with you, and you feel more confident. I did notice before he was trying to help you fry, and you sort of swat his hand away. Mm-hmm. So, there a time where you ever thinking like, okay, just please get out of here. I can do this myself.
You know, I love him to be near me because he's helped me at that time. But it is other question. Have he time to be near me at that period?
Yeah.
But here in America, we have more time to spend together because of our work.
Yeah.
In our country, we haven't time. We met only at night.
Right.
Because his job was the daytime and at night. And
I worked in two places. So that's what's...
Yeah.
It's other story.
It is other story.
And so you just like each other's company. Yeah, especially here, because you have more time for it.
Yes, I told you that our life changed totally when we came here 6 years ago. We have a little bit more free time than we had in Uzbekistan. Our children grow, but we have grandchildren.
Well, looks like the barak are done.
Yes.
Ready to come out.
So you see, very fast.
Yeah.
Delicious dish.
We'll see.
Yes, it is delicious. I know. I'm sure.
You've made this before. You know how the story ends.
Actually, the amount of salt, always check.
That's your job?
That's
your job? You're the salt checker? So these big platters of boiled dumplings. Here comes some butter.
Mm-hmm.
And by some, I mean, I really mean some butter.
It is more heavier than fried dumplings.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it is...
That's half a stick of butter.
Mm-hmm. No,
it's an exciting moment in my week.
So.
So actually, when you strain the dumplings, you left a little bit of the water in the plate.
Right.
But now that you're stirring the butter it kind of creates a sauce. This is great.
Voila. Yeah. And a little bit ground black pepper.
Okay.
I kind of want to taste the fried barak first. Is that okay?
Sure.
All right.
You have three ways how to taste it. Plain, mm-hmm. or just dip it in the vinegar.
Oh, cool.
Or eat it together with sugar.
With sugar?
Right.
Really?
You have opportunity to do it.
Okay. Okay, so these beautiful little fried beef dumplings... with some sugar on top. This is fascinating. Ah, so good. That's so good. I've never had something like that before. Because it is a savory, delicious filling, but just a little bit of sugar on top.
Right.
Oh, it's just phenomenal. Right. Thank you so much for having us in your kitchen, in your home, and let's go have lunch.
Yeah, welcome.
Thank you
for coming to our home. And usually in our country, people say, you bring light to our home. Today, you really bring light to our home.
It got a little bit sunnier over here, yeah. Thank you. Let's do this.
Demira Inatulayeva teaches classes for the League of Kitchens in New York City, and Sahib Animov is her husband and occasional assistant. You can find the recipe for barak at splendidtable.org. Coming up...
My mother-in-law was known for her amazing sourdough starter. The first time we met, she served me her rye bread. I understood the way I responded was a test of my suitability as a daughter-in-law.
A marriage and the bread that knits it together. I'm Francis Lamb, and this is The Splendid Table from APM. I'm Francis Lamb, and this is the show for curious cooks and eaters. Have you ever looked at the person you're in love with and wondered if you really know them? Maybe it's a quirk, you know, some little thing about their personality that you've never minded, or maybe never even noticed until one day you notice it, and it makes you start to question your whole relationship? Well, the writer Michael Weissman knows that feeling. For her, it was about the bread her husband eats. Have a listen.
You wake up one morning married to a stranger who loves rye bread so dense, you better duck if a loaf comes sailing towards you. This bread is solid and nourishing. Think of icy winters and centuries of serfdom. Latvian rye bread sustained your husband's ancestors for 1,000 years. The gods his people worshipped, the gods who gave them rye bread. You thought you were marrying a European, but he is not an Italian or a Frenchman. He is a Latvian, citizen of an overlooked country on the Baltic Sea, sent into exile as a child. He is one of the world's perpetually homeless. And you? You are so safely American, born in a time of peace in a land of plenty. Yes, your Russian Jewish grandparents survived on rye bread in the old country. But in America, they ate mile-high, overstuffed hot pastrami sandwiches, the bread an afterthought. Your husband prefers open-faced sandwiches on Latvian rye with one slice of meat. You both love food, that is true, but he hates excess. You think in time he will become like you. You are shocked to realize that he wants you to become like him. You ask yourself, how did you come to marry a man so different from you? The answer never varies. You wanted to be near him. You felt compelled to be near him. We met at a party in Cambridge. He was 28. A grown-up with a PhD and a career. I was 20, a college senior working at a nothing summer job. The chemistry was immediate. He called the next day. On our first date, we vroomed north to a lake in New Hampshire. We swam, he built a fire, and he grilled lamb chops. Then he opened a bottle of Chateau Lafite Rothschild, 1963. A bad year, but a very good move. I was a student of history. He was history's victim, having been born in Latvia in 1939. In October 1944, to escape the Russians, his family fled westward, going first to the Sudetenland, then to southwest Germany near the Swiss border. For 5 years, they lived in a displaced persons camp. I thought our romance was a prelude to the glamorous life I would live after I graduated. It never occurred to me that John was thinking marriage. We broke up. He married someone else and had two daughters. I moved to New York and wrote a book. In my early 30s, out of the blue, John called me. He was getting divorced. He showed up at my door with a bunch of yellow freesia. He was handsome as ever. This time, I said yes. As to Latvian rye bread, my mother-in-law, a former pharmacist, was known for her amazing sourdough starter. The first time we met, she served me her rye bread. I understood the way I responded was a test of my suitability as a daughter-in-law. I lied and said I loved her bread. In truth, I didn't get it. Marriage surprised me. The way anger escalated surprised me. The rage I felt about the used nuts and bolts and broken dishes John could not throw out, that surprised me too. Most shocking, the hatred I saw in John's eyes when I told him I had thrown away the clogs he bought in Helsinki, the ones that hurt his feet. Marriage surprised me in the other way, too. The unexpected sweetness. John played chess with our son and the neighborhood kids in front of our fireplace. Then he fed them rye bread, sardines, and hot chocolate, the very snack relief workers gave him in the DP camp. Something in John's manner made these American kids crazy about rye bread and sardines. John believed rye bread could cure all ills, including crooked teeth. I scoffed, but his intuition was correct. Bone growth is triggered by the piezoelectric effect. Biting into bread that fights back helps teeth grow straight and strong. As to chewing, the food writer Maria Speck offered an insight that changed my life. Chewing crusty rye bread, she wrote, slows me down. It civilizes me. After the former Soviet Union collapsed, John and a friend started a tiny company air freighting Latvian rye bread from Riga. Later, John found a Russian baker in Brooklyn to produce the bread he called Black Rooster Baltic Rye. John built a market for his bread, handing out free samples. Sometimes I helped. One afternoon at Zabar's, New York's famous deli, a nice-looking fellow with Finno-Ugric eyes swung by my display table. He took a piece of rye bread smeared with sweet butter. "I know this bread. I grew up on this bread," he said, a dreamy smile crossing his face. "Can I really buy it here?" he asked. When I said yes, he leaned over and kissed the lapel of my corduroy blazer. "Thank you," he said. "I love this bread." "I do too," I answered. And as I spoke, I realized that something had changed. I wasn't faking. I loved this bread. Now our marriage had a theme, rye bread. We ate it. We served it to our friends. We promoted it. Our mission bound us more strongly than ever, but it didn't erase John's inability to leave the past behind or my refusal to live inside his past. At times, I couldn't forgive John for being John. The same was true for him. When he got mad, he invariably brought up my most unforgivable act, throwing out the frigging clogs. If this were a film, you would see pages falling from a calendar marking the passage of time. And so we come to a sunny Sunday morning when John's oldest daughter and our grandson are visiting. Wrapping up a phone call with a student, I enter the kitchen where John is making breakfast. Still making breakfast. He is slower than he used to be, which drives me nuts. "Tati, rye bread!" our grandson calls from the sunroom, where he sits on a high chair eating slices of banana and orange. As I chop a shallot for the horseradish sauce, I watch John compose a platter of smoked fish, carefully removing all the bones. I carry the fish and the fixings into the sunroom, where our grandson quickly sets to work on a plate of smoked salmon and rye bread. There is still no coffee. John makes coffee one beautiful cup at a time. Finally, we are seated at the table. Light pours in through the windows. I gaze at the abundance. I look at John. So many years, so many meals, so much rye bread. I am touched by his generosity, his never-ending need to share. My heart cracks open, and despite differences that will never be resolved, I am Molly Bloom in Ulysses, once again saying yes. Yes, I will marry you and be with you and care for you and be cared for by you. Yes. Yes, I will.
Michael Weissman's essay is an excerpt from her memoir in progress called The Rye Bread Marriage. Okay, so close your eyes for a minute. We're going to imagine a new life for yourself. In this life, you are married to the editor of the food section of a major newspaper, a charming, funny, thoughtful soul who happens to dabble as a cookbook writer on the side. What is your life like? Phenomenal, right? Phenomenal? Well, probably. But things also probably get a little tricky, too. Our friend Joe Yonan is the editor of the food section of the Washington Post and is the author of 5 cookbooks, including his new one, Cool Beans. His husband Carl Mason is the test eater of all of Joe's recipe experiments, and they are here with us now to talk about the real side of things. Hey, Joe and Carl.
Hey, how you doing?
Thanks for having us.
So, Carl, let's start from the top. How did you two meet?
When we met at the gym, we shared the same trainer, and
it's a gay cliche,
yes,
Francis.
Yes.
We met at the gym,
and Joe raised the question about what was going on with me to our trainer, and to let him know that he was interested. And my trainer came to me and let me know, and I told him that I would take it from there. And so I didn't see Joe for about a month, and one day he popped up in the gym while I was there, and I screamed from across the gym, hey, whoa, Joe. And
all right.
He all looked right at me, and I was on the basement level, so he looked at me and I went up there and we started talking, and we kind of went back and forth with a little banter, and then
a little witty nervous gym banter.
Exactly. And we set up a date from there, and you know, the rest is history. We're married now.
Right on. So you are someone who knows how to take care of business.
Yeah,
so Carl,
much,
when,
yes,
you, when you found out what Joe does for a living, what was your, well, you were like, all right, that's what's up, or you're like, oh, okay.
You know what, I was a little intimidated. Because when I thought of, you know, the food and dining editor for the Washington Post, that's big in my head. And so I was like, whoa, you know, he's very accomplished. He's very, you know, serious about his work. So I was a little intimidated.
Okay.
No reason to be. Zero reason to be intimidated.
This guy's a softy. Okay, so you guys date. It's wonderful. Life is going great. You decide to get married. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And on your honeymoon, apparently, Joe, you told me this, but I want to hear more about this. On your honeymoon, Joe, you already knew you were going to work on a cookbook about beans.
Yes. Well, I had the contract, and, you know, I've been passionate about them for many years, and I thought that maybe the time might be right. You know, growing interest in plant-based eating. They've certainly been a big part of my diet for so long, and I think they're fabulous. And so we had decided to go to Mexico City on our honeymoon. Carl had never been there. I had been there several times. And in the back of my head, I was also thinking, bean reconnaissance.
They eat beans in Mexico, don't they?
Boy, do they.
Right.
Boy,
right,
do they. Yeah, and you know, you can get dishes from every region of Mexico in Mexico City. So I thought, well, that's an easy way for me to, you know, get a kind of bean tour of Mexico without leaving the city. So yeah, I was also thinking about that.
And that was a plus for me because being from Texas, you know, Mexican food was like big in our family. So I was like, okay, I can deal with this. And I don't have a problem with eating beans in Mexico. And, so, you know, being that it was our honeymoon. So I was like, beans and my husband, it's a perfect combination.
That's just, that is like music to my ears, right? Now you can see why I asked him to marry me. Come on.
Okay, but then how did the next like year, 18 months of your life go?
Well, Francis, there. Well, I mean, you know,
we can keep it to the kitchen. We can keep it to that.
Right. Well, you know, when you write a single subject book, you dive really deeply into it. And, you know, when I started, I think I thought, how am I ever going to come up with 125 recipes using beans, right? So you go deep and you try so many things and you try things that don't work and you try things multiple times until they do work. And meanwhile, there's just the two of us in the house and I'm producing a lot of beans.
Right,
I mean,
right.
You know, at a certain point, the last 6 months before my deadline, I was really needing to nail down 6 or 7 recipes a week. So that's a lot to ask somebody to eat.
Right. Well, I was wondering how was he going to do it? Because, you know, growing up, it was always a side dish for us. You know, I was like 125 recipes. I was like, what is he going to do, you know, with beans? And then I was only thinking about kidney beans, red beans. And we have these beans in Texas that they're called ranch style beans. Those were pretty much, and pinto beans, those were pretty much the, you know, beans that were, that I was familiar with. So that's, you know, I was like, whoa.
What's going to happen? Yeah, yeah. But
little
did
he know, Francis. And then 125 dishes later, how do you feel now, right. Carl?
I still like beans. I had to take a vacation, but I still love beans. And Joe's a great cook. He knows, he's very diverse with them, so.
Okay, yeah, that sounds like the very nice way you would talk about it to the company. Let's get some real talk. When were you like, I don't want to see another one of these things?
It was after he turned the recipes in, you know, turned the book in to his publisher. And there was a little break where we didn't have beans.
Yeah.
And then he started cooking with them again. And I, you know, at that point, I was like, I thought you said no more beans.
But yeah, after my 3-week break, you know, I mean, beans are central to me. They're a staple for me. I'm vegetarian, you know, and Carl is not. Carl eats chicken and fish. So he's got more protein options than I do. So after a few weeks of being off, you know, I'm ready to come back. And I remember I made some lentil dish for lunch one weekend. And then for dinner, I reached into the freezer because, you know, when I was cranking out all those bean dishes, giving them away to friends, we're eating them, I'm putting them in the freezer. I just had a lot even left over. So, you know, I got some stew out of the freezer and warmed it up for dinner. And that's when Carl was like, 2 bean dishes in one day after 3 weeks? I thought you said we were done with this, Yonan. Yeah. I'm promising him that I'm not going to do another single subject book. Yeah, it's not 125 mushroom recipes are not next.
Thank you guys so much.
Thank you very much as well.
Very fun. Thanks for having us.
Joe Yonan and Carl Mason are coming up on their second anniversary. Joe's new book is Cool Beans. You can find a recipe for their honeymoon beans, Lalo's Cacahuate Beans, at splendidtable.org. And that is our show for the week. We hope you had a good time with us, and we'll see you next week. APM Studios are run by Chandra Kavati, Alex Schaffert, and Joanne Griffith. Beth Perlman's our executive producer, and The Splendid Table is created by Sally Swift and Lynn Rosetto Casper. It's made every week by technical producer Jennifer Lukey, producer Erica Romero, digital producer James Napoli, and managing producer Sally Swift. I'm Francis Lamb, and this is APM Studios. All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong.
New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.